you're here. Fellowship, sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Hi, listening friend. You're in for a real treat over the next 20 or so minutes. You're going to hear from my co-host, Pastor Jason Schiffo, along with Dr. Gary Crosland, who's on the phone with us. And we're going to talk about some of his life story and the merged gospels, an incredible work that he put together after many years of study, of prayer, of research, of preparation. Dr. Gary Crosland lives in Texas, and you can learn more about his book, and we'll reference this throughout the program, at MergedGospels.com, MergedGospels.com. But before I have Jason join in on the conversation and we find out how God's at work in Dr. Crosland's life, wow, what a weekend. Enjoyed an Illini football victory with friends at the game. But first, that morning started out with a great men's Bible study, enjoyed a wonderful Sunday worship, and then went out to lunch at the Texas Roadhouse with the Bear Chair and Budget Tours. Some of you know them as Skip the Bear Chair Devil and Larry Budget Tours Bunning. After a quick Sunday nap, out to the Empty Tomb 40th celebration. It was fun to see Shannon again. Met up with Cecil. We'll have him on a future morning program. And Sylvia was there welcoming everyone. Good hot dog, great cupcake. Quickly zipped over to Meadowbrook Park just for a little time of the prayer and worship service with Susie Ron and the whole team. But could only stay for a few minutes, enough time to say hi to Mr. and Mrs. Little Duder. This program is filled with little nicknames. Zip back to Mahomet for an Awana-filled evening. Oh, those 9, 10, and 11-year-old boys are a gem. Oh, what a delight. Well, anyways, thanks, Dr. Crosland, for holding on the line. So what's the Lord been teaching you lately?
Well, the Lord's been teaching me how to take what we have done in Israel and in a laboratory with our books, and bring them down to the heart level to make sure that people feed and feast daily on the words of Jesus, not just to keep it in the top of their mind, but to bring it down to the point that it actually makes sense in their daily life.
Hey, you say laboratory, and that's an interesting way to reference where you've been researching, studying, putting together materials. Why did you use that word, laboratory?
Well, it's interesting, because the way that I wrote the Merged Gospels is I had to sequester myself away from society for about 4 years, like St. Jerome did when he was in Bethlehem translating the Vulgate. It all becomes a big mental exercise as you're merging and chronologizing and translating the Gospels. But what does that mean to people's lives? And today in our postmodern culture, we're encumbered with this thing called secularism. We have the secularists and the atheists and all those people trying to be social architects and change the life of everybody. And the Merged Gospels has a place in that ministry. We have a place on the front lines, and we've been translating a lot of what we do to that front line so that we can be in the battle for the soul of our society.
Dr. Crosland, first of all, great to have you here this morning. And secondly, you mentioned the Merged Gospels, and I think for most of our listeners, they're not attuned to what that might be. So could you give us maybe a little bit of background and let our listeners know what exactly the Merged Gospels are?
Sure. Well, I used to teach Sunday school. It was a good-sized class there in Oklahoma City, where we were at the time, and the class was called the Merged Gospels. And I found myself teaching through the Gospels, but being a Greek translator like I was, I commonly had to merge the Gospels together because not all of the Gospels tell the same story in the same way. A lot of times details are left out or things are put in or whole stories are sometimes removed and the wording is different. The different authors quote Jesus differently. And so I found myself merging them together to be able to teach the Gospels. Well, somebody came up to me after class one day and they said, you know, I've never really seen it done that way. And I looked at it and I said, you know, well, I haven't either. So that kind of sent me on a little journey, and I hid myself away from society for a while, for about 4 years, and I translated the Gospels from the Greek and broke them down into four columns and then further broke them down word by word, and then I merged them back together into one long-form chronologized story, removing the duplicated content. And so what came out of the back end of that was something called the Merged Gospels, and it's where someone can read or listen to all four Gospels at the same time without missing anything, because we haven't removed anything. Now, when you read the Gospels in a merged format, a lot of things, a lot of truths come to the surface that weren't necessarily visible when you read them in series or one at a time. When you put them together, a lot of revelations come to you, and that's why a lot of people like the merged Gospels. Now, in the process of writing the book, we felt we needed to justify the walking path and the chronology of Jesus. So we went over to Israel approximately seven times, and we did a lot of filming. There are 94 places in the land of Israel that are named or referred to in the Gospels. And we went to each one of those places and got film and studied the land and surveyed it and all, so we could actually justify the chronology that we had kind of assembled in the merged Gospels. So the merged Gospel starts out as a book, and it's available, of course, at our website at mergedgospels.com. And it's also an audio book. And this has developed not just into a couple of Bible study tools or devotional tools, but a ministry has developed around that. We can go into that a little bit later on. But in essence, that's what the Merged Gospels was when it started.
I'm thinking about that. What I'm hearing is it's somewhat similar to like the chronological Bible that I've been reading. Both Jason and I have loved that. And yet then it's almost amplified. And yet then you bring it all together. So it's kind of like an amplified gospel account on steroids.
There you go. I like the word steroids there because, you know, there are a lot of gospel harmonies. I probably own maybe 20 of them. And a gospel harmony typically takes a block of text from one gospel and compares it or puts it next to a block of text from another gospel. And then you, the reader, you have the burden to try to figure out what the differences are. Well, instead of doing it that way, we literally broke these paragraphs down word by word, and we compare one word against the other word. So they, and we highlight all the Greek variants so that if anybody's a, you know, in the geeky mode, they can retrace our steps through our translation. But you can compare the Gospels down to the minutia and figure out the differences. Now, the merged Gospels is not just, like I said, a nerdy thing, because it sounds like it is to begin with, but that whole merged translation that we came up with has been put into a format that looks and reads like a normal Bible. So that if you wanted to study the Bible in depth in what we call the parallel section, you can do that. But if you just wanted to read it casually and read the stories of Jesus without missing anything, any details, in chronological order, you can do that in what we call the harmonized section of the book. And that's what a lot of people like. As a matter of fact, I think most people go there first when they open up the book.
Well, that's what I like about this, because where Luke may give a further account or include additional details that maybe John or somebody left out, and then you've simplified it instead of having it be redundant where there's maybe three examples of the same thing, you've kind of put it all together into one narrative, right?
Yes, and the reason that was done is because when you think about it, there really only was one Jesus, and there was one story of Jesus. Now, we have four different versions of that story, four different people who have a different portal on the life of Jesus. But if you walked and talked and lived with Jesus, you would recognize the merged Gospels as probably being a more complete or a more accurate look of what you recall. That's why we felt there was some justification in merging the Gospels together, because, in fact, that's what Luke himself did. In the first two sentences of the book of Luke, he says that he had witnesses, eyewitnesses, that turned their narratives over to him. And what he did with those is compiled what we call a composite gospel and told that. Now, he's our only Gentile author in the Gospels, but all of his eyewitnesses were Jews. Hmm. So in a sense, it is still a Jewish book, and we are retracing the steps of Luke. But instead of using a lot of different eyewitnesses and narratives, we're using our four canonized Gospels as our source documents.
Dr. Crossland, you really, when I pick up the book, actually it was handed to me by a friend. He asked me if I would read it with him about 2 years ago. So I think I shared with you before we even began the interview, I have probably one of the first copies or one of the very early copies, and there's been some revisions done since. But one of the things that struck me as I was reading the harmonized part, or I guess you want to call it the merge part in the beginning, where you give the four gospel accounts. Generally, it seems like it's more so the three and where John decides he wants to be a part of the conversation. Uh-huh. But I was really struck. It completed a conversation I was having in my head that, you know, Matthew was on Jesus' right in some instances, and Luke was over here, and somebody else was over. You know, I mean, the different writers were in different places, so they had different perceptions of what the conversation, what was happening in that moment. Sort of like when you go out with your friends, and then they retell what happened that night. And the person who sat in the back seat of the car has a little bit of a different story. Not an entirely different story, but a little bit different than the person who's sitting in the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that because you do highlight the different usages of Greek words, don't you? So say, I think I want to use the example of proclaiming, where Jesus is talking about proclaiming the gospel, but isn't there instances where the writers use different Greek words? They're trying to say the same thing, but they're using different subtle Greek words. Am I correct?
That's absolutely correct. And let me give you a real-time or a modern example of that. I have my wife is bilingual. She speaks Spanish and English. And she may say to me in Spanish, "Go cut the grass." And let's just assume that there were two other people who heard her say that to me in Spanish. And they are both bilingual as well. And let's assume that those two people go to an English-only speaking person to tell that person what she told me in Spanish. And one of them goes to her and says, "She told him to cut the grass." And another person says, "She told him to mow the lawn." Now, you got to ask yourself, which one is, you know, she couldn't have said both and she couldn't have said neither. And which one did she say? Which one is correct? Cut the grass or mow the lawn? Which one did she say? Neither one, because she was speaking Spanish, not English. Now, that's the dilemma that we have when we translate the Gospels, is because we don't actually have Jesus' original words. His words were spoken in the language of the Jews. Now, some people say he was speaking Hebrew, some say Aramaic. I get to choose my fights, and that's not one of them. So let's just assume he was speaking one of those two languages at the time, but we don't have that. What we've got are Greek translations from different people of what he said, and translations may differ, but cut the grass and mow the lawn, although they may be different words, the meaning is entirely intact. It's the same thing, and no one's going to say, oh, there's a contradiction. Even though there are different words, they're not going to say it has the flavor and aroma of a contradiction, because it really doesn't. And that's the difference between the Gospels. When you put them together and show how different words were used, and they're going to be different because they are, like I said, translations. Even though there are translations, there's no contradistinction between one and the other.
Mm. Do you think, Dr. Crossland, that just having so many years and so many years of academic and really Greco-Roman-driven Greek academic work done on the biblical text has had us subtly in our Western view lose that Jewish flavor? So we understand what Jesus is saying, but we've lost maybe some of the subtleties and some of the beauties and some of the idioms, the things that he's really trying to say, because we're looking at it so literally, and it's like a Greek would.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we as Gentiles in this country, we see Jesus as being more Gentile than he was Jew. And the reality is that Jesus grew up in a Jewish home. He was trained in the Jewish scriptures. He went to Jewish school. People say he went to a Jewish yeshiva, which is a seminary. He taught in rabbinical methods. He was buried in a Jewish tomb. He had Jewish disciples. He kept all the Jewish customs and feasts. And everything that he said, you know, to understand his words exactly, you've got to superimpose them onto the Old Testament. Now, Jesus made a very interesting statement. He said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I wish I could gather you like a hen gathers its chicks under its wings, but you wouldn't let me." Now, if you think about that statement, you got to ask yourself, who is this person claiming to be? He is in that statement claiming to be the Yahweh of Israel, the God of the Old Testament. Now, if that's the case, then Jesus himself is the one who actually wrote what we attribute to the words of Yahweh in the Old Testament. So you can say he even wrote those words. Now, let's take all of that Jewish flavor and bring it upon the real Jesus. We think of Jesus as a person who dropped out of a spaceship and came to planet Earth and said, I'm going to start a new religion, not realizing that what he is actually doing is grafting us in, as Paul says in Romans, he's grafting us in to an olive branch that already exists, and that's the nation of Israel. So Jesus was a Jew. He was not a Gentile, and we think of him as a Gentile. Now, what the church has done over the years is...
You're ruining my whole understanding. I thought he has blonde hair, blue eyes, and grew up on the beaches of California.
And have an English accent.
Yes.
No, and strangely enough, when you see all the Jesus movies on television, and the movies, unless those people have long beards and corkscrew curls in front of their ears, that's not really a true representation of what these men looked like, because they were Orthodox Jews.
So
Jesus was a Jew, and everything about it was Jewish, and we've got to see him in that context. Otherwise, we just miss it. And that has brought about a lot of mistrust and even persecution of the Jews, because they see Jesus as something different than the Jewish roots that he came from.
So you said that after you wrote the Merge Gospel, you sequestered yourself for 4 years and just went about writing this text. And you didn't use a translation, did you? This is your own translation, correct?
Well, yes, and I used 6 published Greek texts. I didn't use just one Greek text. There are, floating around in our society today, about 6 Greek texts that people use commonly to translate the Bible. And I used all of them. So if someone likes the Greek translation or the Greek text that the King James comes from, that's in there as well. We have readings from there. If they like the Greek translation that the modern translations come from, like the New American Standard, that's in there as well. So we kind of, we just make sure we didn't alienate any particular group. We wanted to make sure that everybody had something that they had some theological vested interest in.
Now, why did you do that per se, other than saying giving Zondervan a call and saying, hey, can we use the NIV, or giving Crossway a call and saying, hey, can we use the ESV?
Because I wasn't so much interested in determining what the original author said. You know, textual criticism, and that's a real geeky word, and I'm even apologizing that I use it. Textual criticism is the science of determining what the original text actually said from the copies that we have. That wasn't my goal. My goal was not to try and figure out the actual wording of the original documents, you know, that were penned by the original authors of Luke or Matthew or Mark. My intention was to find the original words of Jesus. And if the different gospel authors have slightly different variations of what Jesus said, because he only said it once, but they have 4 different versions of it, then we've got to get back to maybe ask this question. What did Jesus actually say? Because we have 4 Greek translations of his original words. And so my task took it down to one more level. I wasn't trying to figure out what the autographs said. I was trying to figure out what Jesus said. And so to call up Zondervan and say, can I use the NIV or something like that, that wasn't going to cut it. And we had to do this work actually ourselves.
In case you're just tuning in, I have Dr. Gary Crossland on the phone with us. He's the author of The Merged Gospels, and you can purchase copies and learn more by going to mergedgospels.com. That's MERGED, mergedgospels, GOSPELS.com, and you can find out more. I'm looking at the clock, and we're almost through with this program, and I want to hear some of your testimony, because I don't know if you just grew up always loving Greek, and that was a thing that you liked to do, but I think it's fascinating how you put together this book, and it's a great resource. And I know, Jason, you said that your copy is all worn out. I see all sorts of post-it notes in it, and I look forward to digging into my edition. But we're going to have you on tomorrow's edition of Mark and Friends and hear a little of your story and testimony and some of these trips that you've taken to Israel and how you've literally walked in the footsteps of Jesus to make this more vivid and alive and interesting for the readers of this book, The Merged Gospels.
I was just saying, Gary, you said that now you've taken all this, so you've gotten the autographs and working from the original Greek text, and you've taken all this, you've merged it together. So explain to me what you mean by you're going to take it down to the heart level.
Well, here is a problem we face in our society today. As you probably know, secularism is everywhere. You can't get away from it. You can't turn on the news today without hearing about some cross being removed or some lawsuit or the Ten Commandments being taken away or some nativity scene going away. And you have secularism with its grip around the throat of our society and this tsunami that's overtaking us is infiltrating the courts, politics, education, the media, the late-night comedians, and we feel that the Merge Gospels has a role to play there. And what the Lord is doing is he's exploding the Merge Gospels ministry into something that meets this challenge head-on. What we want to do is to teach people about the historic reliability of the Scriptures, because we are constantly being told, and atheists are very aggressive nowadays, that what we're being told nowadays by a larger and larger growing group of people who don't want anybody to believe that there is a God is that the Gospels contradict each other. They contradict the land in which these stories are actually originally placed. They contradict history, and they were sensationalized over time. In other words, either before they were written down or afterward, the stories got embellished so that this man who was just a normal guy started, instantly working miracles and raising from the dead, things that were added later on. Now, that's what we're told. What I did is I went back and forth to Israel a lot, literally putting myself in the footprints of Jesus. And translating the Gospels and merging them and chronologizing them was one thing to determine whether or not the Gospels contradict. I can tell you right now they do not. We also went to Israel and went to literally every single place and studied every site that is named in the Gospels and answered the question, do the Gospels contradict geography? They do not. We also studied the history. But let me bring that back down to your question. This is where the rubber meets the road, because, put it to you like this, spirituality in America is declining. The number of people in America who claim to have any religious preference at all is declining, especially among 18 to 49-year-olds. And the reason is just what I stated. It's this assault by the secularist community who, like I said, don't want anybody to believe in God. So there needs to be an answer for this. And the Merge Gospels ministry is bringing its tools into this fight to be able to answer this question. And we teach seminars everywhere in churches and groups about the historic reliability of the Scriptures.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We need to have you back on tomorrow's edition of Mark and Friends, because I'd love you to share some of your story, your life experiences in Israel, and some more on this great book called The Merged Gospels. And you can find out more at mergedgospels.com, mergedgospels.com. Well, thanks for being with us today, Dr. Gary Crossland, and return tomorrow for tomorrow's edition of Mark and Friends. I hope you can be with us again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.